Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Match Ball.
Hello, welcome to The Match Ball, live streamed for our TSB Plus subscribers on YouTube. You can also get the podcast version as well. It's Dan, Michael, and today we have Rob in the studio in the absence of Moscow. Moscow is at a wedding, isn't he?
He is. Was he at a wedding yesterday, but said he would still be too hungover to do
that? I think he's recovering, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's a shame, because...
What a diva. Well, I was going to say, I've got the only sharp object that's in the studio, and I've removed them. The scissors I'm talking about. I mean, remove them from your grasp, because that was a tough watch, wasn't it? I think that's the fairest thing we can say about it. But pointing a clean sheet against a European challenger. So are we happy with that?
Are they a European challenger by virtue of being on the South Coast?
Well, they're eighth. they're eighth, aren't they? But I should mention Levi Solicitors as well, of course, who are our partner on the podcast. 10% off your legal fees. levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Yeah. Should we start on Junior Firpo? Because at what point, what's the earliest time you mentioned him in your notes when you were scribbling stuff down?
My top note is it was on 7 minutes, get Firpo off.
Right. What brought you to that conclusion 7 minutes in?
I think he'd already been booked and he'd already been skinned. And then, had he already done what was potentially a second yellow at that point?
Yeah, I've got 3 minutes, Brighton chance, cross from the right. Then 4 minutes, Firpo was booked. Then 7 minutes, Morpé was missed. And that was, he missed the chance, which was across from the right as well, I think.
Yeah, it was very tough going. We're into Laurens de Bock territory there against Derby, or I can't remember which game, but you're into like Tony Capaldi territory with that performance. He was awful.
He was, wasn't he? It looked like he'd won a competition to play for Leeds. It was 17 minutes when I wrote down Firpo walking the line, get Strouk on.
Yeah, that was 16 minutes. I didn't, he could have been booked again for that shirt pull. Mm. And it was genuinely surprising that he wasn't subbed off before halftime like we've seen Bielsa do with Calvin Phillips and Pascal Strike. We were all calling for it, weren't we, to be honest?
Well, I remember going back to, I was on the Phil Hay show when we spoke to, I think it was Dermot Corrigan, who's their Spanish football guy out there, about when we signed Firpo. And he recounted a story of Firpo being yanked, I think, after about 16 minutes or something like that in one of his Barcelona performances, his early Barcelona games, and it shattered his confidence. So maybe they just left him on out of sympathy, because it was really difficult watching him do that. And you just saw every time, was it? What's his face?
Lamptey
got down the outside every time. Mm. I don't think he got helped much by Jackie on that left-hand side, because he wasn't great either. But then again, who was?
It was so easy. It was embarrassingly easy how he went past him, though. He didn't even do a trick, did he? He was just kick down the outside, run, and that was it. It was so easy. I mean, second half when he was up against Dallas, who it's worth remembering is a right-footed right winger, right back, central midfielder. He isn't a left back, and he was so much better against him.
Mm.
So it doesn't say much to our actual left back.
It definitely helps that Lamptey got tired in that second half and was taken off, because there was a moment just before then where he really could have run at Dallas and just passed inside. But I mean, Firpo coming back from injury doesn't need a really, really quick guy running at him all night. And it just got very ugly, didn't it?
Well, to be fair, everybody raised eyebrows in the run-up to it when they saw Firpo being put back in at the expense of Strouk. It just didn't make a huge amount of sense, did it, with Strouk in the form that he'd been in?
Well, I guess it would have made some sense insofar as Lamptey is quick and Strouk, for as many good qualities as he does have, he's not particularly quick. And you can imagine someone like that would maybe be able to turn him and get him behind and stuff. And a purpose-built left-back would, in theory, be a better option there. But
that's the thing. Like, we really need him to work, because, I mean, we went to Brighton last year and Alioski was horrendous as left back, and that was, you looked at that game and thought, well, there's a really obvious way we can improve. We signed a proper left back who can do some of the attacking things that Alioski can do but can also defend. That sounds like a really good idea and make us a better team. And then we signed a left back and it's not.
I mean, he's demonstrably worse, isn't he?
Yeah, like defensively, he's really bad tonight, and then going forward, he's not doing anything.
The thing that always got me with Alioski, though, was his decision making and sometimes his passing and distribution. But then you looked at that, and the stat that I picked out that was tweeted by LUFC Data in the second half, 68% pass accuracy in the second half. And that was half the problem, wasn't it? I mean, because we were saying maybe get Shackleton on because he's got a bit of pace about him. But I mean, he did that ridiculous back pass to Melier.
He was terrible.
But there was a point at which I actually made a note of this. Let me have a look. It was, there was a pass down the line from Shackleton to somebody running in the right channel. And he just couldn't even bend it around the outside. It just, why can't we pass to each other anymore?
Don't know. Have you got any ideas?
Well, should we just end this now? Just pack this in? I haven't really, no.
It's weird the effects that Brighton have on us, because that's three games now since we've come up where against Brighton, it's just felt like they've had large, big men in the way of everything we try and do. And I don't know if it's one of those things with Bielsa where just certain managers have certain styles and it just doesn't work, like Gary Monk kind of had it. And yeah, whenever we come up against Brighton, it just doesn't look the same at all.
But why? What is it that they do that is like a hex on us or something? I just can't figure it out.
No. I really wish I knew. It felt like our passing today was just, it was so predictable as well. Like when we were attacking, it was just a case of, well, there's only one pass on it, and they were so often just reading it and cutting it out, and it felt like there was no snap to any of it. It didn't feel like it was really laboured, and it was so frustrating to watch us give the ball away just so cheaply all the time. There was one thing I made a note of in the second half where it was when...
Was it when you described Firpo as a hologram?
No.
It's better to have an actual person on there than a hologram, because that made me laugh.
It was when... it was the Dan James, when he was fouled by Bissouma and we had a free kick, and it was kind of midway inside their half, and you thought, well, we're not creating anything. It's maybe a chance to get in the box. And instead, we just knocked it 5 yards sideways. And then within about a minute, it was back in our defence. And you just think, well, do we not have a better plan than this? Like, it's so lazy. It looks like the sort of thing you do if you're trying to run a clock down.
Go on.
There was a lot of that in general play where the defence or the midfield had it, would have the ball, look up, not really know what to do, and then just pass it backwards. And then Cooper or Llorente would hoof it forwards, and Brighton would just win the ball back again.
But when you actually take that second half on its own, I mean, the first half was one of the worst halves of football I think I've seen under Bielsa, if not ever. It was terrible, wasn't it? That second half, although passing was bad, decision-making wasn't great at times, we didn't have a huge amount of threat, neither did they, really. I mean, that spell early in the second half, it felt like we got our act together a bit more, but you're talking about being down the bottom of the well and then scrabbling three bricks up, I guess, aren't you? Because it was shite, but, you know, we could have nicked it towards the end. There was a point at which I thought, there's no way we'd nick this in the last 5 or 10 minutes, but we might.
I mean, there was the Roberts one, wasn't there? The post, which would have been really lucky, because it was I think he completely mishit the actual original shot and it was deflected. And he had, I mean, Tyler Roberts, we have to talk about him. It's obligatory. I thought it was probably our best player, actually.
Do we have to? Because Moscow's not here, is he? He's not at a wedding, is he? He's off scouting central midfielders, actually, come to think of it. But no, he was fine.
Yeah, he was one of the, I'm not suggesting.
I mean, he's not the answer to that. One of the tweets that you always see is, if Tyler Roberts is the answer, what's the question? Like, and I know people don't like him, and that's fine. I don't particularly think he's up to it at this level. I don't think he's, you know, we need better than him maybe when we can replace him. But he was fine when he came on. He did fine.
Which is nice, because after Gelhardt starting at Tottenham, that felt like a bit of a kick in the teeth for him. So for him to then come on ahead of Gelhardt, and I think that was probably the change that we all wanted to see. And he did well. So, yeah.
I think that we probably would have seen Gelhardt, wouldn't we, had we not been forced into taking Firpo off, because it felt like Rodrigo looked absolutely knackered in the last 20 minutes of that.
God, he was labouring. He was labouring,
not particularly involved. He even looked like he might have been injured.
Who was Sideshow Bob that was on their side? He was Spanish as well, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah, the one who kept screaming every time anyone tackled him.
Yeah, I think it was Alan Smith in the co-commentary.
Cucurella, that's his name.
Alan Smith in the co-commentary for Sky was busy saying how, he hasn't even had to break stride to adapt to the Premier League, this Spaniard kind of thing. And I was thinking, we paid lots of money for Rodrigo. He looks dead tired.
And Firpo.
Bradley Stead in the comments on YouTube just asking if the wedding was Moscow's or someone else's. Do we know?
If it was Moscow's, we weren't invited. I know you two had obviously the blazing row.
Just a lover's tiff.
The other day, so you probably got you booted off the list.
Which I think we were both right, because I didn't express myself particularly well about our lack of depth in the squad, and he got angry because I didn't say it right.
And in the end, Moscow ended up arguing there were no other central midfielders in the world, which was a strange argument.
The case, yeah.
But anyway, I didn't think central midfield was necessarily the issue today. I don't know what was that. It was a complete failure, I felt like.
Yeah, I mean, when you can't pass to one another, it's always a bad sign, isn't it?
I thought Forshaw did all right again.
Mm. Yeah, Stoic was all right when he came on. He got a bit weird towards the end, but he kind of did well. But it was very telling at half time when Sky cut to Jermaine Beckford, who's usually like the most positive Leeds fan in the world. And he just went, that was bad. That was really bad. And that was all he said, and they cut to the advert.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to... it was like going to see a film where you've paid in and you think, well, this film's shite and I hate it, but I am going to sit here until those credits roll because I've paid my 7, 8, 9 quid, whatever it is, to get this ticket. It was, it was a game only. A mother could love that one. What about the subs then overall? Obviously, Firpo off made total sense. And then Phillips as well. So it was Shaq and Strouk for Firpo and Phillips at halftime. That was a bit of a blow as well, losing Phillips, wasn't it? With his gash.
Well, what was his actual injury?
Apparently, my mate Neil, watching on in the Middle East, said that the Arabic TV coverage said it was his calf, but it wasn't anything serious. So hopefully that's true.
He'd had a bit of a weird first half, though, as well, because he'd started playing in defence, kind of. There's that thing in the back three that everyone's trying to make a big deal out of, even though he does it kind of fairly regularly. And then he moved forward like the last 10 minutes of the first half, whereas Pascal Strouk came and sat in front of the back four, and I think just... It's that thing when we go to a back three of just, why don't we just do what works for us normally and play that 4-1-4-1, and that seemed to help in the second half a bit. It still wasn't great.
Yeah, you do wonder if, let's say, maybe the tactics just aren't quite enough, are they? Sometimes, I don't know. Particularly, is it just, you know, people being low on confidence? Can you put it down to that, just the lack of confidence?
It's weird though, because it has clicked at certain points. First half at Spurs, we were great.
But then, you know, we went and... they turned it around and then lost in the second half. So does that then damage your confidence further?
We just keep veering from one to the other, don't we? Week by week. It's like Leicester did feel like close to putting 90 minutes together and looking back to normal. But then, yeah, and then you go Spurs and the first half is great, but then the second half is kind of naff. I mean, even going back to the first day of the season, we got spanked at Old Trafford, and then against Everton, we were kind of all right. And then at Burnley, it was a bit rubbish. And there's just no consistency, and no one's kind of putting it together.
We're truly missing somebody up front, aren't we? Whether that's Bamford or anybody else. And given that we signed Rodrigo ostensibly for that position, it's disappointing that we look completely toothless when Bamford's not in the side. We look better with Gelhardt in there because at least he was able to link it up, and the ball seems to stick with Gelhardt for a little bit, doesn't it?
I must admit, I don't really like Dan James
up front.
Particularly when Brighton are such a big team. There were times when Harrison had the ball out on the left and he was looking into the box, and you've got Dan James stood there with like four fairly large defenders, and you think, well, what's the point? Like, there's absolutely no purpose in crossing to him. If it's a goal like he's won at Spurs, where it's like a ball that you're breaking at pace and you can get a ball in behind the defence at ground level kind of thing, that's all right for him. But when it was a game like that, and it was a bit, it felt like a boggy sort of performance where they were, whenever we attacked, there was never, whenever he let them stretch, they could always set up and, you know, turn and face the ball. It was never like we had them backtracking.
We were trying to get through six bodies on the edge of the area. Yeah.
So it just made it, it makes very little sense to have Dan James in the team up front, I think, in that kind of a performance.
No, it doesn't work for me, because there were times as well, I agree, when like Harrison would get it on the left and you thought, cross it in, but then actually you realise as you're thinking it, well, what you're going to cross it in for? And then he'd maybe check back inside, look for a ball inside, or it'd come back to someone like Dallas, who'd then, you know, switch it onto his right and try and whip it across rather than, you know, pulling it away from the keeper, because chances of getting Dan James on a whipped in ball headed is fairly minimal, I would suggest. But you can tell, yeah, we're missing something at the top, up top there, aren't we? And it must be Bamford, and he's still, by the sounds of it, maybe Brentford away. He's that far away, sorry, another week away after Brentford. Come back, please.
Well, then we can get back to saying he's not very good.
But at least he does the running, and it sticks with him. It does tend to stick with him when he's up there, and you appreciate him a lot more. What do you reckon to that last sub? What was Robertson's for Jackie then? Jackie, overall, effective, ineffective?
No better or worse than anyone else. It was fairly crap, along with all of our attacking players today.
That's the thing, when it's as disjointed as it was today, it does feel hard to pick on individuals, maybe fair by side.
Yeah.
Because it just all wasn't right, was it? And if they're all a bit out of sync with each other, then it just looks crap.
Yeah, Rafinha didn't. He had a few nice moments. He was well doubled up on, though, as Rafinha. There were times when he beat someone, but there was always an additional...
Trossard was there a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah, there was always an additional player there with him, so he never had much space to do anything.
Talk about Trossard's face. That's one you'd never tire of kicking, isn't it?
We were talking just recently about how grey a face Steve Morrison has. Mm. Trossard is right up there for grey face. Very, very dark under the eyes and stuff, isn't he? He's a terrifying looking bloke.
Haunted man.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Give me something positive to cling on to the night of that
got
game.
A point.
We did get a point.
A really undeserved point.
It's weird though, isn't it? Because like after the Leicester game where we played really well, I was kind of gutted that we didn't win that game, whereas today we're absolutely awful and I feel really relieved that we've got a point out of that. It feels good.
Well, they do say, don't they, if you aren't going to win a game, at least make sure you don't lose it. And it felt towards the end then, I mean, it was going to be, that was the best outcome.
To be clear, the reason we didn't lose it is because they're quite shit at scoring goals. Like the chance Mope had that he put over was really, really easy. And then, I mean, he had actually been given very fortuitously, as it turned out, as a free kick on Shackleton. But there was another one Mope put over the bar in the second half, which was even worse.
But then there was the bobbly one as well with Melier, where I was convinced it had hit the post and hit the back of him and gone in, but it hadn't, it bobbled the other side of him. So at least we got a little break with that. And you could sense there was some nerves creeping into their crowd because they got that far into the game and they hadn't got the goal or the breakthrough yet. So there was still something in there for us, despite everything being as shit as it was.
We were all expecting Leeds to grind their way back into it and then do something stupid as well and give it away. So
I think you were, weren't you? Definitely.
I was absolutely, yeah, convinced it was going to happen. So that was a relief that didn't happen as well.
Well, Cooper seemed to have that little bit of madness in him, didn't he? Where it was twice in the first half that he managed to kick it onto his own arms and he was like, oh God. Not now, Liam.
Even when it's not his fault, there's a sort of a madness in his orbit, isn't there, sometimes?
Yeah. The second one in particular, where he was kind of sliding across the pitch, and I think it touched more or less every part of his arm. Yeah.
I think they had four penalty shouts, Graham Smith tweeted out in the first half. Was it four penalty shouts in that first half? Would you have given him any?
No. I don't think it even were.
No.
To be honest.
No?
Nah. Cooper always just looks flustered, doesn't he? When he does stuff like Llorente, you see him do mad stuff like that all the time, but he just styles it out.
Yeah.
Whereas Cooper looks kind of frantic and frightened.
I mean, did we have any chances to speak? I'm trying to think what we actually had. I mean, because I haven't got any notes for chances. I've just put a few things about subs and
there
whatever.
Were a couple of fairly late Roberts chances. There was one where Strout played a long ball over the top?
Yeah.
On his left-hand side.
And he ran onto it. No, it was on Roberts' right.
On the reverse pass from...
And he kind of... It was a very narrow angle. And
Forshaw sent it through to him.
It was Forshaw, I can't remember. But it got a decent save out of the keeper. And then there was the other one on the left where...
I think that's the one you're thinking of, Dan, where... Forshaw. Dan James pressed and won the ball high up, didn't there? And then it went to Forshaw and Rodrigo in a back heel to Roberts. But
yeah. Roberts had a couple of half chances and he didn't fluff them particularly. They were reasonable saves.
Question from Julie, sorry, on the chat on YouTube saying, can we not write Firpo off this soon after he's come in and had 5 starts?
Yeah.
I know it's rough, but we need to make it. But you don't want to write him off. I mean, we see with Bielsa's teams, it does take time for these players to bed into the system. It's tough, isn't it? Like, we're only just sort of seeing Dan James really get into it now, like against Spurs or whatever. But that said, he's done nothing to warrant a place yet, has he? And I know you only do something to warrant that place by playing, but it felt today like letting him out for that second half, or letting him out for the remainder of the first half was a risk.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a bit of a conundrum.
I don't want to write him off, but you can't possibly watch that game and say anything positive about him because he was horrendous. Like he was the hologram description. I said when we were watching it, he just was going past him so easily. It was dreadful. The only way it looked like he would stop him would be to foul him and get another booking. And it was so hard to watch.
You're just
willing the ball to not go over that side of the pitch because you know, like if you know, as soon as he's one on one with him, he was going past him. It was a very tough day for him.
It feels like his performance might be a good advert for why we make players returning from injury play for the 23s, because I don't think Firpo's played for the 23s since he's come back from his latest injury anyway. And he's had half an hour at Spurs. It didn't really do anything. It wasn't his fault, any of that. And then he's had 45 minutes here and you think, God, he looks a bit...
I was going to say, you can't really afford to carry someone. Okay, you can't have a passenger like that, can you, when things are not really going and it is so tight and you're under the cosh and confidence isn't high. Let's talk about Diego Llorente, because Nathan, I presume this is tongue-in-cheek, is describing him as the new Pontus Janssen, but in brackets he's put negative. And then further down, we've got Timothy mentioning his best contribution being when he stayed down with the Conor Cody-style head injury to grind down the remaining minutes of the first half. But under the circumstances, good. Just break the game up. If we're as bad as we were,
Seemed to have treatment for quite a long time. The replay of it wasn't really clear.
No, I didn't see what happened to him. But then, yeah, he didn't look in a good way.
Because he seemed to be running from... He seemed to be behind the attacker. I don't know if he just ran his own face into the back of someone's head and went down for that. It wasn't entirely clear, but did have treatment for quite a while.
Was it on our show, I think it was, when we spoke this last week and I said I played this fixture on FIFA because I've got a later Leeds career going, and we were in the lilac kit, Brighton in their home kit, as we saw, well, the very kits that we saw tonight, and I struggled with it watching it on the telly, which is obviously what we did tonight, watching it on the telly. Do you think genuinely that the kits might have had any influence on the passing? And I ask that as it shouldn't have, but you know, I know we're in danger of Man United away at Southampton in 1993 grey kit.
Why could they pass it better than us?
I was going to say, it didn't seem to bother Brighton, did it?
Let me think about that and come back to you.
But, did they have special polarizing contact lenses in or something that made it easier for them?
That was just what I was
one theory.
I was gonna say.
I would feel uncomfortable blaming that performance on the kits.
Did you enjoy seeing those two kits up against each other?
No, it was awful.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fan of this kit. The away kit last year, the burgundy one, it felt like we won a load of games in that.
The Rafinha kit, isn't it?
This one.
Can we put some weight onto it though as being responsible for this in any way, shape or form? I'm trying to find a reason.
Okay, yeah.
Thanks, Michael.
It's the kit, if you want. I sense you just want me to say it, so.
Yes. Confirmation bias is what I'm looking at.
Okay,
it's
the kit's fault.
So what else is there to say about that? I'm really struggling, because it was fairly awful all round, wasn't it? What do you reckon of Pawson? Because Pawson sent off Strouk in the Liverpool game. Again, you mentioned actually something in that game, Michael, about him always just looking slightly confused, like he doesn't know what he needs to do or it wants to do.
Yeah.
Being led by the players a little bit.
He needs instruction, but from wherever he gets
Jurgen Klopp.
Sometimes, yeah, exactly. From like a player or, like there was one, it was Trossard actually in the first half where he had been fouled, but it took him to stop and go, that's a free kick. What he's just done to me there is a free kick. And then Potter gone, yes, no, you're right. Sorry.
Thanks for letting me know.
I was thinking about something else. Yeah, you're right. That is a free kick. Thanks for letting me know.
Thinking about the roadworks on the way home.
Yeah, like, yeah. He just seems to... He needs an instruction from someone to actually referee the game.
Mm.
But, I mean, he wasn't terrible, was he? He didn't change the match.
He didn't do anything ridiculous, no.
I don't think so. It didn't feel like he was... It feels like a lot of games this year as well, it feels like there's been loads of really soft stuff given. It felt like it was fairly even.
Anything to say about Pawson?
No, like he's a ref.
What about VAR then and that Rafinha one in the first half? Penalty or not?
When we saw it live, I think we all fancied it, didn't we? On the replay, I was less convinced. It did look like the guy was just trying to get in his way, I think outside the box first, then he fell over into the box, didn't he? And then Rafinha went over, but I don't know. All the penalty shouts felt a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, Julie has just put in the comments, he's not going to talk about our penalty. We've just done it, Julie. Another positive Timothy brings up is Forshaw actually getting through another 90 minutes and looking fine. And that is important, isn't it? Because it looks like we've got a midfield again of sorts.
There was one bit where he went in for a real heavy tackle. It was like a sort of a block tackle where there's a lot of weight between And everyone went, oh no, no. But he jumped up straight away and did loads of running today as well, did Forshaw. I thought he was I don't know, I'd like to see the yardage on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ran more than anyone today because he seemed to be very, very busy in midfield.
Despite basically being on crutches for 2 years, he could probably outrun you, do you think?
Correct. Yes.
Probably.
On the crutches, I dare say. At any point during the last 2 years, he could have outrun me.
So where do we go from here? It's weird, isn't it? This season is just, I don't know. We were saying during the game, like, this season's just become such a grind.
We need to beat Palace.
You think?
Where are they? Work? They're... No, we can't catch them, actually. They're 16 points. We have 12. We can get very near to them if we can beat them.
I predicted 9 points out of this series of three games on the Phil Hay Show. Again, somewhat tongue-in-cheek. But if we came out of these three with 7 points, it would make us all breathe a lot easier, wouldn't it?
I'd take 5 points off whatever now.
Do you have confidence that we can turn it on against Palace? Because that's the problem with it. Like, a performance like tonight is, like, even if it wasn't great, and you take a point out of it, you'd want more of a showing, wouldn't you? Because we don't seem to be able to string together like two good halves, like a whole game. Mm. We've strung together two bad halves tonight, but not two good halves. And it feels like we just need that to happen just so everybody can be reminded that we're all right. But, you know, here we are a third of the way through the season and we're still kind of waiting for it.
Our worst performances have not been followed by other bad performances, though, have they? Like Rob mentioned, getting spanked on the opening day and then playing Everton, and it was like, oh, actually... maybe it's fine.
We're always bad at Brighton as well, aren't we? And like you say, we do tend to correct ourselves in the next game. So getting Palace at Elland Road under the lights, yeah, let's just go and beat him. I was thinking the other day that just what relief there would feel if we were to get Bamford back and he was to just get a goal at Elland Road, and it just feel like such a big lift, because we've not had that really since... I know he's got in the West Brom game, didn't he? But that was reduced capacity and didn't really feel like a proper game. But this season, he's not scored at Elland Road, and it does feel like we're lacking that focal point in attacking. Yeah.
The only proper real moment we've had like that was the penalty against Wolves, where we kind of got that big release and we were like, you know, absolutely bouncing when we came in here afterwards.
And that Wolves game came off the back of Southampton, which was probably worse than that, just about. Or maybe Southampton just scored and Brighton didn't. Yeah. I think the goals probably would have changed the way we're seeing that game. I think if Firpo is getting skinned as easily as that in the first half and they stick a couple in, people probably want to see him immediately sent back to Barcelona. But as it is, we can kind of go, well, no, I'm done, sort of. Let's hope it's better next time.
Because I'm still, you know, sat here having watched that and I don't feel too downhearted by it. Okay, fair enough. This season's going to be a grind. It may well be a relegation battle. But I'm looking forward to Tuesday because I do like Elland Road under the lights. The mood in the ground, whilst there is anxiety about the league position, there is going to be, and maybe it will grow over the course of the season, it's still very positive and hugely supportive, isn't it, inside the stadium. So don't believe everything you read on, you know, Facebook and Twitter. It's just a place to express anxieties, isn't it? It's not real life.
Yeah.
It's the same as this, as well, you know.
Yeah, it's been very balanced in Elland Road. People are not on anyone's backs. I don't get the feeling. Like we saw in the Spurs game, you know, they had that bad first half and they were very audibly booed off at half time. There's not been any of that, I don't think, at Leeds. There is a lot of tension underlying it all, but everyone's kind of all right still, I think, until we're not.
It'd be just nice to just score some goals and have fun and just, like you say, get that feeling back. And we're just not scoring or looking particularly threatening, are we? Like, not consistently anyway. And yeah, just having a bit of fun at Elland Road sounds nice, doesn't it?
Would you put Joffy back in for the game against Palace up front?
I thought he was unlucky to be dropped. I thought he did really well against Spurs. And having someone up front who is always looking to shoot is a big benefit.
Because, like, Rodrigo, he's had moments, hasn't he? Like, he's looked really good at times this season. There's times when he's looked really, really laboured. And you're going to play him just because of who he is and the regard that he's held in and being, you know, one of the senior players in the group. But I think there is an argument for definitely putting him in there. Maybe make him one of the wingers sit it out.
I mean, Harrison's not been good, has he, this season in general?
No, and shifting James inside, as you said, is sort of nullified James as well, because his big strength is doing what they were doing to us tonight, which was just knocking down the outside.
Although when he had one opportunity to do it today, he failed miserably, didn't he, James? I can't remember when he did it. I think he might have just run it straight out of play or gave it straight to them or something.
He was doing his thing today as well, where he was just shooting quite a lot, but none of it was good, which is annoying. I mean, I do have one note of 28 minutes, James air kick, but so I don't think that will count towards his shooting stats, but he just completely missed the volley, didn't he?
Yeah, it was his left foot, wasn't it? On the just dropped him on the edge of the box, and he did a big... It looked a very dramatic spin. You've got to give him credit for the spin. It looked very athletic.
Anything else then to bring to the party before we wrap it up? because it's, you know, so it's been a difficult night, hasn't it? Not a great deal to enjoy out of that.
Yeah, well done to people who went down there. They had really, really bad journeys, people getting down there.
Because it is cold and stormy, the weather and horrible stuff. In Leeds, isn't it? And all the way down, yeah.
Fair play. So. And fair play to the Brighton fans that did bother turning up and stayed to the end, because there were a few. It is quite bad getting away from that ground, in fairness. I think a lot of them just thought, nah.
Why, in what sense? It's just because it's in the middle of nowhere?
It's quite isolated.
Right.
Yeah. But I thought me having a pop at their fans, I thought they were crap.
Anything else then from the notes, or is that your lot?
That'll do.
It's about as good as it gets.
It is. Okay, well, we'll debrief it properly on propaganda, which we'll be doing on probably, I'm thinking, Wednesday, because we're back in at Elland Road, aren't we, of course, on Tuesday. And the main weekly show as well, where we'll bring you all the latest news, and we'll look ahead to Brentford and racing up the table.
Mm.
Sound all right to you?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Give it a go. Okay. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening to this one. Hopefully we'll be able to bring you something joyful, because it was put to us like on Twitter just before we came on air, like when I tweeted out to say that we were going to do it. Like, I really want to look forward to the match ball at some point this season. Like, yeah, we do too. We do too. We keep waiting for it to kick into action, don't we? But, you know.
Propaganda's no fun either. When we you might get some angry Brighton fans.
You think?
Oof. Maybe. Really? Well, they'll be annoyed that they've not won. I mean, that's what I mean. So they'll be
mildly irritated.
Yeah. Oh, Melier was decent. made one really good save in the first half. When he got his fingertips to that one that Trossard shot the way onto the post.
Go on, pick yourself a man of the match then, just to close it out. Would you get one? Can you pick one? Sorry,
Melier for sure.
Dallas for saving us from.
I don't think anyone gets above a six.
Okay, fair enough. Right, we will wrap it up then, and hopefully Tuesday we'll be back in here happier. We will, won't we? Of course we will. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll see you in a bit. The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.